Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turn now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, AM 1400. We're positive talk radio for Ventura County. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, it's 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is What You Don't Know Can Hurt You. All three of my guests know something that may change what you believe about the world. My first guest is a financial guru who'll tell us about a little publicized investment vehicle that could make you money. My second guest heads a well-known organization, and she's here to tell us how we can take advantage of what that organization has to offer. My third guest is a TV star who is so vilified she can't walk down the street without somebody commenting on how nasty her character is. The truth is, however, she's a nice person, and we'll get to know her. And as always, if you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Ken Winans, is known for his insightful and profitable financial advice. He's a successful investment management entrepreneur and an award-winning author, an active philanthropist, and a renowned collector. He's the president of Winans International, an investment company and fund manager. In October of 2009, he became the senior portfolio manager for the Winans Long Short Fund, stock ticker symbol ETFMX. He has a bachelor's degree in business and economics from the University of San Diego, University of San Francisco, and he's working on his master's in finance. He has a really cool collection of space memorabilia. We'll talk about that if time permits. He and his wife, Debbie, are both longtime residents of the San Francisco Bay Area. Welcome to the show, Ken. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, Bill, I'm doing great. Well, now take a breath. You know, that intro, I don't know, do you swim a lot or something? I can't believe you said that all in one breath.
It's amazing how much I can get out. It's just how full of hot air I am, Ken. That's all it has to do.
We won't go there. It's all hot air sometimes when you get down to it.
It is. But I'm glad to have you on the show today because I really want to talk about this. This is a little known subject. I mean, most of us are really flying blind when it comes to preferred stocks. They're under the radar. They're very little appreciated. But in 2008, everything about preferred stocks changed because even though preferred stocks market capitalization is only about 7% of the corporate bond market, the U.S. government used preferred stocks to stabilize the world economy. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, it's funny. We all go back and try to remember 2008 in many ways was a blur from the standpoint of things were very fluid. They were very scary. There was a lot of talk of another Great Depression and all these things. And I think many of us who are, you know, free market people who believe in government stays on its side of the aisle and business does its own thing, found out, oh my gosh, government is going to get directly involved in buying interest in financial institutions. What was the surprise was that instead of buying, you know, normal, as we call it, common stock, they bought this security called a preferred stock, which was funny because I had written the first book on it back in 2006. You know, it was, as you say, a very obscure area. Very few people really knew much about them except a brief mention in a college textbook. Suddenly, they were becoming the hot item. So the new book I have coming out, which is coming out this month, is called Preferred Stocks, The Art of Profitable Income Investing. And it does deal with the fact that here is a, as I would call it, one of the few areas that I think an individual investor has a leg up on big money managers. I really do. And just let me just point this out to you. If you were to look at what's going on this year? We know how volatile and nasty this year's been. It's been up, it's been down. Preferred stocks, Bill, follow me on this.
Okay.
Okay, if you bought into the preferred stock market, your yield, your dividend yield would have been around 8% if you bought and held this year. Those shares are up an additional 23% so far this year. It's by far the best investment vehicle out there. Forget China, forget India. This has blown away everything.
All right. Now, let's get down to it. First of all, let's just define for people who may not be familiar with preferred stocks, what is a preferred stock? Why did the government want to hold them? And then let's get into why there's such a great return on investment in very turbulent times.
Well, a couple of things. First off, what is a preferred? It's one of the reasons I had to write another book about it. It confuses everybody. I'm literally going to quote a phrase out of the book. Their equity, but that's about as far as the common, the consistency with normal stocks is. They are as much like a bond as they are a common stock. So what I tell people is, look, if you can't really look at them as an additional asset class or additional type of investment, then take the word stock out and just call them preferreds.
Okay.
But they are in equity. You are, if you look at the balance sheet of a company, they're going to be listed on the owner's side of the balance sheet.
All right, so they are in equity, but they really are more closely related to a bond. So I guess that gets to the fundamental case here for preferred stocks, and that is the notion between owning versus loaning. Mm-hmm. What's the difference there, Ken?
Boy, you know what? You did a good job on reading that stuff I sent you. You know, you only made one mistake in your intro. You said I was working on my master's. I actually have had my master's for over 20 years, and I've actually taught MBA courses in investing.
My apologies.
Well, no, that's okay. I'm hoping my school still honors it. Good grief, you're making me nervous.
Who knows? Maybe the school went bankrupt.
Well, I hope USF's not bankrupt, but you never know.
You never know.
But anyway, it's a phrase I used to use when I taught, is I would tell all these students, look, you're getting caught. Everybody gets playing financial twister with all the terms and the buzzwords coming out of Wall Street. All investing comes down to you either own or you loan. You're doing one or the other. And loaning means that you are basically, as banks do, or they should be doing, lending money to businesses and individuals, which then take that money and do something productive with it, where you get a consistent level of interest coming back, and you have a date in which the loan has to be repaid.
Mm-hmm.
Owning, as we all know, whether it's a piece of real estate or it's a stock or it's owning a business, you don't know one year to the next whether it's going to be a good year or a bad year. You can have both. But in the long run, owning usually produces more return. And we all know that. You know, if you own versus loan, you should make more money in the end. Preferreds fall into this kind of vortex between the two. It is owning, but you are also primarily getting the bulk of your return, at least historically this has been the case, from the dividends paid on the preferred stock. That's why most people have owned them in the past.
All right, so they are a great investment vehicle if you're looking for return and if you're particularly looking for dividends coming off of the return, right?
That's the historical reason for owning them. I mean, it's kind of funny. They used to be called this kind of dull, boring security before the government became a big owner of them. And, you know, the movement in price usually, I mean, this is very high. To have it up 23% so far in a year, this is unusually high for preferreds. On average, the average price increase is somewhere between 4 and 5%.
All right, so the increases are more similar to bonds. But that brings us to the fundamental question, Ken Winans, and that is, why did the government jump in and buy the preferred stocks? Why didn't they just take out loans, or why didn't they buy the common stock?
Well, it's really funny. By the way, a very good question, because the government did it, and so did Warren Buffett. If you recall, here's the richest man in the world, that when he decided to give money to Goldman Sachs and to GE, he didn't buy the common stock. He also bought preferred. So here's the reason why. We were looking at a very, shall we call it, hostile economic scenario, and most people felt even then that the rebound or the recovery out of this would be very slow going.
Yes.
When you have a slow economic environment, cash is king. You want income, because you're not going to get the big pops in valuation that you're typically been used to, like we had in the post-Cold War 90s.
Right.
So I think that the government made a smart move, as did Mr. Buffett, in that, look, I want to know for sure that I'm going to get some cash flow off this thing. Plus, remember, in the case of the government, they had to make the case, as they did to all of us, if we all remember TARP and the bailout, which to this day I think most of us have incredibly mixed feelings about.
Oh, yeah. We could argue about that for days.
Yeah, absolutely. But the government made a promise. They said, we would make money on this deal. That's what they've continued to tell us. I mean, we have it now with General Motors going public. They're trying to tout that in the end, the taxpayer will be made whole and, in fact, make money. Well, I think that the government hedged its bet, because they needed to show some big rates of return coming off those investments. And one way to do it is to say, hey, we're collecting 5 to 7% a year from the banks.
Yeah, very good. We're talking to Ken Winans, everybody. His new book is titled Preferred Stocks, The Art of Profitable Income Investing. It's coming out this month. And really, when it comes to preferred stocks, there's probably no greater authority in the United States than Ken. Because, Ken, among other things, you created the Winans International Preferred Stock Index, which is monitored by all financial managers from coast to coast. So why did you start the index, and how did you start that? What was your thinking, your rationale behind it?
How much time do we have?
Go for it.
Okay, well, first off, you have to remember that by, you know, Winans International is primarily an investment management firm. I mean, that was the business model when I first set up the company back in 1992. That's what we did. In my training, in my many lives in the investment business, I've also been an investment analyst. When we started to invest more money into preferred stocks back in the early parts of this decade, and by the way, the reason I did it is because there was a shortage of corporate bonds. My investors wanted yield. I started looking around. Gosh, can't find good bonds. I'm going to have to start buying more preferreds.
Ah.
But here's the problem. You know, imagine if you wanted to go buy common stocks today, and there was no Dow Jones Industrial Average. There was no S&P 500. You would be feeling like you're flying blind. You have no idea how to gauge the market. So believe it or not, there was no modern-day preferred stock index before we invented the Winans International Preferred Stock Index, better known as the WIPSI. And we started out and we said, well, look, what does a benchmark need to do? But my research team, we all had gotten together, set up a mandate. We had it set up in 2005, and we used it primarily as an internal gauge for us to gauge what was going on in the preferred stock market. And then from there, I had other institutions, both academic and financial, say, hey, we'd like to use that research too. So what's really funny, Bill, is that what came out of as a need for me has now become a revenue source for Winans International because people pay me royalty rights to use that index. So it is kind of funny how things work out.
And I'm pleased it has become a revenue source for you, but the more remarkable thing to me is it has become really one of the true barometers. You put it in the same category as the Dow Jones and the S&P, and if you are in preferred stocks, it is definitely one of the gauges that people watch, if not the only gauge that people watch.
Well, so I'll tell you what, there's actually a couple of firms that basically are what I would call the data vendors for, you know, whether it's the Federal Reserve or it's Wall Street. One of them happens to be in Los Angeles, a firm called Global Financial Data, ran by a very smart man named Dr. Brian Taylor. Ask Brian what would happen, or if you call down and say, hey, I need a preferred stock index, and because I want to do multi-year research. I want to go back 100 years and look at preferreds. He's only going to say, I only have one of them. It's called the Winans International Preferred Stock Index. That's it. There are other indices out there, by the way, Bill, but for some strange reason, they only go back 5 or 6 years, which is not enough time to really analyze anything.
No, particularly as we now know from this market, 5 or 6 years seems like a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Well, Ken, let's just change gears for a minute. I love the preferred stocks. We're going to come back to that in just a minute. But let's do a quick review of asset classes year to date, because here we are in November. We're coming into the Christmas season. We always get the Santa Claus rally, so I'm looking forward to that. But let's just review all of the investment categories, or the major investment categories. The Dow at the beginning of business today was at 11,346. That is at or near the 2-year high. The S&P at 1213. That is at or near its 2-year high. NASDAQ 2562. Not near its 2-year high, but pretty close up there. Gold. This is the big bugaboo. Gold is at $1,409. That's $1,409 per ounce of gold, which is an all-time record. Oil is sitting at $86.72 per barrel. And the U.S. dollar index, while it hit its high back in June at 88, today it is sliding and has been consistently sliding since June down to where it sits today at 77. So looking at those data points, and the VIX, if you're interested in volatility, the VIX is shot up in April, but now it is pretty calm as well. If you look at all those data points, what picture does that paint for the U.S. economy between now and January of next year? Because we all know January is a seminal month.
Well, and you know me, I'm a big believer in the January barometer. I do really use this. I mean, a lot of people give passing, you know, acquiescence to it, so to speak. But I actually set the tone for how I invest for the rest of the year on how January does. Here's a couple of things. Number one, I think most of us are pleasantly surprised that the U.S. equity markets are up. It is interesting to note, though, let's very quickly talk about the Dow. Remember, the Dow threw out three of its longstanding components back in 2008. Remember, it threw out General Motors, Citibank, and AIG. If you still had those in the index today, this thing would not be at 11,000.
You're absolutely right.
We have to remember that. All these indices go through an evolution. They bring new names in, take old names out. So don't get confused to think that it's a static group of companies. But bottom line, the equity markets, knock on wood, have had a pretty good run back to the upside. I certainly talked about what was going on in the preferred stocks. Bonds have been on a good run this year. By the way, I'm talking about corporate bonds. Corporate bonds. You are looking at double-digit returns there. I think the surprise I have, if you want, and I'm going to come back around in a moment to your question, is that when you hear all the hoopla about China and India and Russia and Brazil, that you've got to be in all these markets, these things are going to be beating the stuffing out of the American market. When I look at the exchange-traded funds for those countries this year, Brazil's up 6%. I mean, the S&P 500's beating Brazil.
Beating that.
The S&P 500's beating China. India's up. India's actually doing better. It's up 19%. Russia's up a little bit. But my point is that all the talk you hear about, you've got to be in these areas. I'm just suggesting that this year has been as volatile for many of the foreign markets as it has been for us. So don't think that there's some halo out there waiting for you in the foreign markets. Several of the foreign markets are still way down on the year, so you got to be very careful.
Yeah.
Hey, there is one commodity you had forgotten, and it is silver.
Ah.
We talk about gold. Gold's up 27% year-to-date. Silver is up 59% this year.
Yep.
So why is this happening? Well, the government's printing money. We all heard what the Federal Reserve's doing, so that's why the dollar's going down. When that happens, what happened in 2007? Oil goes up, gold goes up, commodities go up. I think those trends are going to be established as long as our government continues printing money. I would not be surprised to see oil possibly back above 100 sometime next year if the government continues printing money.
Oh, okay.
Dollars are priced in oil.
Ken, we're going to have to leave it there, but I'm going to invite you back. We'll talk about commodities, both soft commodities and hard commodities, on the next show, because I think that there's some opportunities in the commodities, which, of course, is always a precursor
Absolutely.
To inflation. Real quick, before I let you go, just give us a very, very fast update on the Winans Long Short Fund stock ticker symbol ETFMX.
ETFMX, it is a long short fund, as you said. It means that we've been long and been short this year. I'm very happy that it's actually having a good quarter, but we haven't made up the ground we lost earlier in the year. But we have fixed the problems, and I think it will be fine next year. But I'll tell you what, real quick on this. We will go to cash. If this market begins to teeter, the reason we have that, we use it as a hedging vehicle in our portfolios. I will have that go short again or possibly set it all cash. I'm not 100% sold on this rally.
All right. And we're going to have to leave it there. We've been talking to Ken Winans, everybody, renowned financial advisor, and now the author of a brand new book, Preferred Stocks, The Art of Profitable Income Investing.
Hey, Bill,
Ken, we'll talk to you down the road.
Billy, real quick, it's on Amazon right now.
Oh, it is on Amazon, so you can get it there.
Amazon today if you choose to.
Thank you so much, Ken. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Take care.